Frenari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. Welcome back. We're here today. I'm Corinne Frenari. I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And here we are. I'm very excited about today's show today. I think the sun is making us just happier and giving us a little more vitamin D and a little brighter look on life. It's just such a beautiful day. And now we have an incredibly interesting interview and with information that I do believe most of you are not aware of. So listen up, and there's a lot to learn here. Carol, can you introduce our guest, please?
Oh, I'd love to. First, I'd like to make sure he's here. Dr. Z, are you here?
Well,
hello?
Okay, well, why don't we just begin while he's getting in? And today we're going to speak about autoimmune disease. And autoimmune disease right now is an epidemic, and it's increasing in the young as well as in the adult population. It seems to be increasing as a residual to infections. So people are still suffering and their immune system is turned on, and they literally, their white blood cells are attacking themselves. So what is an autoimmune disease? Well, we're seeing a lot of rheumatoid arthritis in children, which we never saw before. We're also seeing a lot of diabetes, type 1 diabetes in children and adults, which can be as a result of autoimmune disease, the body attacking their own pancreatic cells. But we, in adults, we're seeing lupus, arthritis, scleroderma, all of these, Hashimoto's disease, which has to deal with thyroid and hypothyroid. So what we're seeing is this conglomerate. Oh, and another one, which we hadn't up to now thought of as an autoimmune disease, but it has all the characteristics, is fibromyalgia. And people are walking around after experiencing a severe virus. They're walking around in chronic muscular pain. And so what are we doing about it, and how do we approach it? Are you there, Carol? Okay, so let's talk about, I just saw this very amazing statement by a doctor, an endocrinologist in Brazil. And first of all, he started by talking about vitamin D and the importance of vitamin D, and that it's equivalent and similar to a steroid. It's similar to a hormone rather than a vitamin. It targets every cell in the body. And there are 229 genes that vitamin D targets, as well as creating then 25,000 functions in the body that vitamin D stimulates or modulates and is responsible for. So that's pretty astounding when you hear it put in that way. But he also said, of the 50 million known sufferers of autoimmune disease, of the 50 million known sufferers of autoimmune disease, what we're dealing with is all or nearly all, and let me quote this, all or nearly all with autoimmune disease have an increased resistance to the effect of vitamin D.
Hi.
Hi, welcome back.
I think we have Dr. Zamperon by phone now. Are you there, Dr. Z?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, perfect. Thank you.
So I started out by giving a very, very, and welcome, Dr. Z.
Hi, I think you have to turn your mic down or something to hear an echo, but okay, good.
Okay, can you still hear it?
Yeah, now it sounds great.
Great, thank you. So I started out by giving a very cursory explanation of autoimmune disease.
Yeah.
And I would love
stuff.
You to explain in more detail. But first of all, we got a little ahead of ourselves. Carol, can you introduce Dr. Z? Oh, maybe not. Dr. Z, are you still there?
I'm with you, yeah.
Okay. Well, Dr. Z has been, I don't have in front of me your bio, but I know you're a professor.
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit about myself, sure. I mean, that would suffice it. So I'm a retired professor at the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which I helped found. And the school closed last year, and so I retired from teaching, but I'm still actively practicing and researching and writing and teaching about autoimmune disease and the many theories which causes autoimmune disease, because we know many theories that do that. And I'm doing a lot of fun stuff as well, other talks, other work. I just got back from a ethnobotany trip to Jamaica, where they just made a documentary on me and my 40-year study with a Jamaican shaman who passed away a while ago. But anyway, so it's a little bit about me, and I've written a lot of books and done a lot of research on autoimmune disease. So, yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Oh, well, we're so happy to have you. Can you just give
Can you guys hear me too?
Perfect.
Hello?
Perfect.
Perfectly good, because I'm having some trouble with the computer shutting me out. So, really.
So we've introduced Dr. Z, and we just asked him if he could give us an explanation of autoimmune disease and where it comes from.
Yeah, great idea.
Well, we use the term autoimmune disease like it's one thing, but it's really many things. But it comes from Dr. Paul Ehrlich, who died in 1915, to describe the body's innate aversion to immunological self-destruction. And it actually comes from the word horror autotoxicus. Horror autotoxicus, which is the horror of self-toxicity. The body should not attack itself. The body should not be allergic to itself, so to speak. You know, it should not do that. So there's a lot of reasons that break down and happen when this occurs that affects virtually any organ in the body can have autoimmune disease. You have autoimmune disease that affects your eyes, like uveitis. You have, like you pointed out before, I heard your introduction, you can attack your thyroid and Hashimoto's or Graves' disease. Of course, there's a myriad of ailments that attack your joints and connective tissue. Mixed connective tissue disease, Sjogren's syndrome, which it, you know, can also attack the eyes and the salivary glands and virtually every organ in the body. Of course, the dreaded lupus, scleroderma, either diffused or disseminated scleroderma, rheumatoid arthritis. So there's all there's a myriad of these things, including even things that, of course, attack your nervous system, like multiple sclerosis and whatnot. So they're not all treated the same. They're not all the same. They're very different, even some of the etiologies. But there are some core theories that link all autoimmune disease. I taught rheumatology for just shy of 20 years and taught a whole 18-week course where we met 3 hours a week talking about all these different theories and how, you know, naturopathic doctors and alternative doctors and whatnot need to know these theories inside and out so that they can apply this and figure out, well, we know the label of the autoimmune disease the person has, but why did they get it? What's the underlying causes, and what can we do potentially to help mitigate those things, those reasons? And then, of course, sometimes even though you mitigate the underlying reasons, the disease is like a wildfire is spread, so you have to do damage control. So it's a lot of things that you have to keep in mind when you're treating autoimmune disease. It takes all of your efforts as a holistic practitioner and many, many modalities to help people.
Is there a unifying theory behind autoimmune diseases that makes your body decide to self-ignite?
Not really, Carol. There's probably about 30 different reasons for why people develop autoimmune disease that I was able to calculate when I was doing my research. From genetic autoimmune disease, but I think it's an interplay of genes and epigenetics, environment, infection, and immune system aging and immune system skewing, they call it, or what they call B and T cell mutation theories, which we can get a little bit into without going crazy bananas. I can get deep into it like a wormhole. To molecular mimicry theory is very...
I was going to ask about that one.
Adrenal stress theory. So let me read some of the main theories. So you have, you go back to the 1940s and 50s, you have, of course, free radical theory. I'll mention them and then we can go over them. You can lead me through them. Sex hormone theory, that's why actually, Carol and I connected at a conference years ago, and we became buddies because of her vast knowledge on sex hormones. But there's a whole sex hormone theory that I definitely want to talk about with Carol and Corinne. And then there's also these B and T cell mutation theories that are just fascinating. We'll talk about
mind-body theories. So those are immune system cells.
Pardon?
Those are the immune system cells produced by your immune system.
Right, yeah. So they go, there's different, well, we'll talk about them in a bit. They can mutate, or they can become senescent. They can become old, belligerent, cranky cells, like a cranky old man. And they don't listen, or sometimes they call it promiscuous teenager theory, where they don't listen to the parents anymore. Thank God I'm past that part of my life, but anyway. So then you have multi-system dysbiosis theory. That's incredible, and that really has been... That's not even a theory anymore. There's so many papers on it that's even you know, the dentists and other practitioners have know so much about this when you have a bad tooth. And I'll talk about a case of a lady who reminded me of a lady who had a bad tooth that when she got the tooth removed, it completely stopped her rheumatoid arthritis. And then you have adrenal theory, complement theory, the loading theory, methylation theory. So there's a lot to it, you know, to unpack, but, you know, with autoimmune disease.
But sometimes it's a little bit of each.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So you've got a multifactorial cause, but yet you have a patient who walks in the door suffering. That's one of the reasons why, when patients come in very often to a holistic medical office, one of the first things they start working on is the intestines. Even though you did not come in to be treated for your intestines, once they start working on your intestines, some of the inflammation goes down, similar to when that dentist pulled the tooth and the inflammation went down.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, it's funny because that actually was talked about in Benjamin Rush's memoirs. You know, I'm a bit of a history buff, and I taught history of natural medicine for 2 decades, as well as rheumatology at the college, the Bridgeport Naturopathic College. And so I remember reading something about Benjamin Rush writing about when he removed this person's infected tooth, his rheumatic afflictions, as they used to call it in the old days, went away. And so, wow, so that, you know, that got me looking at all the literature in looking at stealth pathogens, bad root canals, other issues with the teeth, and this particular autoantibody, which is called anti-CCP antibody. So that's really interesting, because when you have anti-CCP, it means that one amino acid in your body, arginine, has been turned by bacteria living in your gums, deep in your sulcus or in a bad root canal. It's turned it into citrulline, and that, when you change proteins in your body and create these alien proteins, that your immune system doesn't like that. Your immune system likes it. It surveils the body like a surveillance system, and when it sees these proteins that change their shape or their structure or their charge, it doesn't like that, and it starts attacking it. And they call it alien protein. That was the old word for it, you know. And now the new word is, if people Google anti-CCP antibody, they find that that's a big marker for rheumatoid arthritis. It's now the number one marker for that doctors check for. But it's all because of this change in the proteins. Now, the proteins can change because of they get hammered by free radicals, or they can change based on the immune system becoming aberrant too. But yeah, that's an important thing. And the presence of these bacteria living deep in our gums, there's one that's called Porphyromorphous gingivalis, or they call it P. gingivalis for short. That bacteria, if that is colonizing your teeth or your root canals, you can get rheumatoid arthritis from that. So that's well studied in the literature now. If you put in that, and that's why dentists are so, it's interesting how in conventional medicine they separate the mouth from the rest of the body, but the dentists are always saying that you got to look in the mouth.
Definitely. So, Dr. Z, so we've kind of painted a broad stroke here, like what's going on.
Right.
So we're interested in knowing what the wonderful world of herbs and mushrooms have to do with autoimmune disease.
Well, the idea behind herbs is that we want to turn off the immune system or modulate it so that instead of turning the whole immune system off, which happens with a lot of the biological drugs that are out there, whether they target tumor necrosis factor alpha or other B cells and whatever, and those have their value, you know, certainly, we want to find herbs and substances that turn off parts of the immune system, but turn on other parts. So, in other words, there's these special T cells, which are called T regulation cells. And those are the ones that we want to expand their populations because they're the ones that kind of modulate. I call it immune chill versus immune kill. Now, a lot of times, if you think about it, if you have a stealth infection, you're immune. Now, whether you know you have the infection or your doctor doesn't maybe know you have the infection, your body knows. So it's going to marshal your immune system to keep killing these stealth pathogens, which are trapped in the connective tissue somewhere. They could be trapped in the collagen. And so your body's going to keep trying to get rid of this. And, you know, whenever you have an infection, you get rubor, dolor, calor, like the old Latin would say, you know, pain, redness, swelling. And that, you know, and so we need to sometimes in these autoimmune diseases, we need to just assist the body in actually killing the microbes that are stealth. Sometimes the microbes lose their outer membrane and they can kind of escape detection in the immune system, you know, for a while. So we want to use herbs sometimes that helps kill things but doesn't kill the cells, you know, in the long run. So some of those are like, some of them that I'd like to talk about would be Andrographis. That's a fantastic one we could talk about. Scutbi, which is Scutellaria bicalensis or Chinese skullcap. Artemisia. Smilax, which is called Sarsaparilla. I just got back from my trip to Jamaica and we saw all kinds of Sarsaparilla. Actually dug it when we were down there. And some powerful immune regulators, including rosmarinic acid, which comes from rosemary and other plants like that. That's a very important one. And Romania, which is probably one of the most powerful ones for reducing inflammation. So some of these you probably never heard of, so it'll be fascinating to go through them.
Yes.
Andrographics we can use in our cooking. We can even get slices of the root and put it in our soups. It doesn't have that much of a flavor, but you'll still get the benefit. Is that not correct?
I think you're referring to astragalus, which is a little bit different one, but, you know.
No, I got that switch.
No, that's okay, because I knew what you were thinking about, because I often put it in the change of season soup myself, and when we go down, when we take people down to Chinatown to study Chinese medicine, I run a trip there. We're going in June, by the way, June 11th to Chinatown, to teach people about Chinese medicine, but we see the change of season soup. But, yeah, astragalus is another one of those plants that kind of modulate the immune system that people with autoimmune disease often will get. Yes, but Andrographis is a little bit differently. That different one. That's one that is they call it the king of bitters because it's very bitter. And you know, it was used by the government of Thailand for malaria, dengue, even COVID. It was used for. So it was used for all kinds of viral and bacterial and protozoal infections. So it seems to be, and it gets rid of heat. You know, always in Chinese medicine, you have to look at, you treat the patient, not just the disease. So a lot of these autoimmune diseases are very hot diseases, you know. So we want to use cooling herbs to kill things, because you could kill things with oregano oil, which is very hot and warming. Or you can kill things with Andrographis, which is very cooling, and you want to kind of apply the right herb to the right person and the right illness. So you have to look at the person, you know, that has the disease, not just the disease the person has. But, yeah, Andrographis is fantastic for getting rid of these stealth infections, which is often the first part of my treatment, is to kind of clear the terrain of any of these infections that could be in the mouth. There was a study that actually showed that cranberry in women that have a particular stealth infection, which is called Proteus, Proteus vulgaris, Proteus mirabilis, and it actually lived in their bladder and their urinary tract, even though they didn't know that they actually had an infection. It was a stealth infection, and using cranberry all the time helped this group of women that had rheumatoid arthritis and the presence of this Proteus bacteria. So we know that cranberry is very safe to do every day and can help with these infections.
Now, we know that many of these people are very weak. Their adrenals are weak.
Yeah.
So giving the herbals can help, but don't we need to support the body so they work conjunctively, not together, rather than just one side?
Well, what we want to do with the adrenals is we want to use things that support the adrenal medulla and the adrenal cortex. Now, one big study, which was in the year 2000, Rheumatic Disease Clinics of North America, talked about hormonal alterations in rheumatoid arthritis, and they found that adrenal hypofunction issues are there often 10 years before the development of rheumatoid arthritis. What they did is they found groups of people that had rheumatoid arthritis, and then they went back and looked at their blood work, and you know, they kept records, good records, and they found that 10 years before they got arthritis, they had adrenal hypofunction. And they looked at a lot of the different steroids that are put out by your adrenal glands, including DHEA, pregnenolone, many of the other corticosteroids, and they found that, yeah, people's adrenals were shot way before they had rheumatoid arthritis. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone with shot adrenals is going to develop rheumatoid arthritis, but it was almost an antecedent of what happened. And I think hormonal restoration may be the key to getting people fixed from these autoimmune diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's pretty good evidence. We used to compound a mixture, and there were only four or five formulas. They're called the Leafman formulas, and I didn't like that Dr. Leafman used propylene glycol as the delivery system, but it was very generous, estradiol and testosterone. And then instead of using hydrocortisone, which would have been identical to your body's, then he'd have a little prednisone. Yeah, one of the very strong synthetic type cortisols that create a lot of problems shutting your adrenals down. Yeah. But those Leafman formulas were like magic for people. The target audience was rheumatoid arthritis. Right. I think that could be improved on. The trouble is Dr. Leafman was long dead, and you can't prevail upon him to change his ways. So.
Right. Well, it turns out that there's some plants that are fantastic that do very similar things. And one of those herbs is Romania. It's one of my favorite plants for patients with inflammation because it has these glycosides. Now, when you hear the word glycosides in plants, I always think steroid because, you know, I taught plant chemistry for many years. So it has these things called geoglutinosides. And these are very, very amazing for not only teaching the white blood cells, the regulation cells to be more active, but it also seems to help with the adrenals, and it stops these inflammatory cascades that happen in the body. Like, for instance, interleukin 18 is a bad one that happens in a disease called silicosis. So they did this major study where they looked at silicosis and found that Romania actually stops the problem with, I mean, it doesn't really get rid of the silicone that's trapped in your lungs, but it actually stops this autoimmune disease from happening. They also found that it also stopped complement. Complement's really interesting because that's kind of how, you know, you hear about lectins and you hear about stay off your allergens and stay off your lectins and get rid of candida and all these things like that. Well, part of the problem is that portions of bacteria and fungi stimulate complement, which is this very powerful inflammatory pathway that we have to help recruit our immune system. Problem is when it starts doing collateral damage and start attacking your cartilage and joints versus and synovial tissue versus, you know, keeping it in check. So Romania stops excessive complement, as does, you know, fasting and changing your diet and things like that. So Romania is really good. But what's really interesting is Romania, actually, they did a big study on people, on lupus patients who where their kidneys were being damaged. And Romania had fantastic results in stopping the kidneys from failing. Actually, the researchers said, this was in 2016, they had patients with lupus had a significant decrease in death because they were using Romania, and this was in 23,000 patients in Taiwan.
Wow.
Oh,
and that's
so,
amazing.
You know, it's a major, major plant that's used in traditional Chinese and Asian medicine and something that's very safe to use. So that's a good one to for people to know about, Romania. Yeah.
When you talk about the molecules like you just did and the end of the word is oside, that means that herb has a structure like a steroidal hormone, like a sex hormone, adrenal hormone, vitamin D.
Yes.
I think that's fascinating. It took me 20 years to stumble on that.
yeah. It's true. Yeah, that's when you hear those glycosides. Those are like the superstars of the herbal kingdom that put out inflammation and also stimulate the healing of tissue. For instance, Gotu Kola, which has nothing to do with cola, but that's the name, and it has no caffeine, by the way, like cola. Gotu Kola is what they call a connective tissue eutrophic, which means it builds connective tissue and heals connective tissue. So that could be a very important one as well. Yeah, anything with these glycosides is very important. You mentioned mushrooms, though, Carol, before. Mushrooms have actually been the subject of many studies, including cordyceps, which is a very important mushroom that is a parasitic mushroom that grows out of I think insects is where they got the cordyceps from originally. Anyone remember that?
No.
I think that there's some really good in the movie Fantastic Fungi, I think Dr. Stamets has some good videos of the cordyceps mushroom growing out of ants and caterpillars and things like that. It's kind of bizarre, but now they just grow it on medium, so you don't have to, like, you know, eat ants and things like that. Uh-huh. But it seems to really be what they call an amphoteric, which means it balances the immune system, whether it's high or low. And that's so fascinating about the mushrooms. That's so unique is that you can use them in a patient with cancer where they need a lot of immune support, and then you can use them in a patient with autoimmune disease where they have to dampen the immune system. So I use cordyceps. I use like 100 to 1, where 1/5 of a teaspoon gives you like 100 grams, which is a good solid dose of cordyceps. And the most recent article, maybe came back about 5 years ago, showed it was people's Hashimoto's antibodies went down significantly when they started to use the cordyceps. Of course, people that are allergic to mushrooms and things like that, they might have to use caution and check it out with their doctor before they use any of these things.
Well, that's a fun thing. Is this common to all mushrooms, or is cordyceps specific for autoimmune, you think?
Yeah. Yeah. The cordyceps, of the ones that have been looked at, the cordyceps and the reishi mushroom, which is called Ganoderma, are the ones that have the most amphoteric effect for the immune system for autoimmune disease. The other ones, you know, I mean, they're good and healthy, and they do all kinds of things, like lion's mane, very important for your brain and things like that. But I don't think they have the extensive applications on autoimmune disease like those two, the reishi and the cordyceps. So I usually use those two for autoimmune disease.
Mushrooms are pretty rich in beta glucan.
Is that why they're so often used in allergies? Because one of the most common autoimmune, and we're getting into it now, is allergy season, and people suffer so intensely from allergies. Is that because they're a balancer? Is that why mushrooms are used so commonly, along with herbs?
Yeah, there's some research, good research on that, as what they call amphoteric. That's a Latin name that means balancing, amphoterism. In a hyper state, it makes it hypo, and in a hypo state, makes it hyper. So allergies would be, you know, hyperactive state of your eosinophils or basophils or your T cells and B cells. You know, these are all the immune cells that are going bananas because you're having all this pollen in your nose or whatever you're allergic to. Yeah. It sends a signal for these T regulation cells, which I call immune chill. There's immune kill cells and immune chill cells. In allergies and these autoimmune diseases, the immune wants to kill. It wants to attack things. But you want to chill it out, and you want to chill it out without turning the whole thing off. And that's where these great herbs come in and great naturopathic therapies, too. Because there's other therapies, too, that we will talk about maybe at some point, like fasting and things like that. But go ahead. There's a few more herbs I wanted to. Speaking of allergies, the best one is rosmarinic acid. So they did a lot of research on this. I did a whole webinar on this. And they found out that the rosmarinic acid, now that could come from rosemary or it could come from catnip family, you know, mint family plants. But the rosmarinic acid had a specific action to actually kill off the abnormal T cells. Remember I talked about that there's many T and B cell theories that cause autoimmune disease? Well, one of the big ones is that the T cells and B cells, which are part of your lymphocytes, they get so indoctrinated to attack that they don't even need the stimulus anymore to attack. It's like they get so turned on, they become these aggressive, belligerent cells and your immune system's like, okay, buddy, it's time to calm down. And your immune system says, I'm not going to listen to you. And it just flagrantly disobeys the auto balancing things that we have in our immune system. Your immune system is supposed to take these abnormal B and T cells out of commission. It's supposed to kill them, called autophagy. It's supposed to just knock them out, but they don't listen. Almost like a cancer doesn't listen in a way. So it turns out rosmarinic acid is a natural way to kill off these T cells. Now, allopathic conventional doctors do it with methotrexate and these old chemo drugs and a lot of these other drugs which kill off the immune system. Right, exactly. But you have damage. You have all the collateral damage that happens, whereas rosmarinic acid does the same thing but leaves the whole – it just gets rid of the bad cells, doesn't affect the good cells. And that's what's so great about some of these plants. They're so gentle and yet so effective.
Now, the rosmarinic acid, I just saw this, and I don't know if it's accurate, but I'll bring it up, ask you about it, that you could literally take rosemary and put it into a jar and then cover it with, if possible, organic or olive oil, and then seal the jar and then put it into some boiling water, let it sit for a period of time, and then pull it out, and then the active agent of the rosemary infuses into the oil, and then you could be using the oil daily. Does that work like that?
Well, I mean, that's a good way to make it. That usually most of the studies were done on really powerful rosmarinic acids, like 50 to 1, which takes more industrial yet natural yes. ways to concentrate at that level. But yeah, that's a good kind of homegrown way to make to extract rosmarinic acid. You do get some of the essential oils found in rosemary. Two in that, some people are sensitive to that, but rosmarinic acid is not the oily fraction of the rosemary, it's the flavonoid fraction, because rosmarinic acid is what they call a polyphenol, so it's kind of a cousin to the flavonoids and stilbenoids and these compounds with, you know, that we find in green tea and very powerful antioxidant in grape seeds. So, yeah, but the research on rosmarinic acid is incredible. It's been developed into several different really cool nutraceuticals that have been clinically trialed and have helped with allergies. So rosmarinic acid is very good for that.
What about pain with some of these situations with all the inflammation? Are there some herbs that would mitigate that particular symptom?
Yeah, because like you said, Carol, when people come in with many autoimmune disease, it's attacking their connective tissue and they're in a lot of pain and they don't want to take, you know, NSAIDs or opioids or other things like that. So, yeah, I mean, clearly now with the restrictions on cannabinoids being lifted in many states, cannabinoids can be very effective for pain by modulating some of the pain chemicals, which, you know, make the nervous signal arc from one nerve to the other. So, you know, certainly I recommend that people try a good quality CBD, maybe 1,500 to 3,000 if they're in pain. Now, other herbs that are good for pain include, of course, white willow bark is well known for pain. It's where we get the salicylates. Well, originally, white aspirin came from salix, which is not willow. It came from meadow sweet. That's a cool trivia question. Everyone always says white willow bark. They're wrong.
That's right.
The answer is salix. That's why they called it acetylsalicylic acid. So salix is like meadow sweet. They found it in the willow bark a couple years later. But, of course, we have our anti-inflammatories, which don't really kill pain, but they can, you know, they can stop pain by being anti-inflammatories, like Boswellia is a very good one, and, you know, curcuma. But for real pain modulation, you have to go to some of the Chinese herbs and the herbs of the tropics to really get into some of these pain. I just got back from my trip to Jamaica, and like I said, they did a documentary on me and my studies with the Jamaican shaman, Jamba of the Maroons, and he introduced me to Jamaican dogwood, which is one of the most powerful pain killers known in the herbal kingdom, and also Mulungu, which is used more in South American rainforest medicine. But these are very powerful. They're what they bind to the GABA receptors, so they're very similar to how the drugs Klonopin work and some of these other things that kind of modulate the what's called GABA, which is or glutamate, which is something that again causes the pain signal to really arc quickly through the nervous system. So yeah, now of course, like any of these pain things, they do cause sedation. So do some of the modern drugs cause sedation. You know, opioids cause sedation. A lot of the, you know, muscle relaxing drugs cause sedation. So, you know, if you want a non-sedation thing,
The opium poppy. The opium poppy also falls in the herbal family. And if we hadn't been dinking with the makeup of creating all these opiates that were much stronger, we had a very good pain reliever in the opium poppy.
Sure. Now, something that's a cousin to poppy but doesn't seem to work just like that, but that's we should tell the listeners about that, would be corydalis. Corydalis yanhusu is the Chinese name. Now, that's about 40% as strong as morphine, but doesn't have any of the side effects. So yanhusu is they've tetrahydrobulbine and several of the other alkaloids that they've discovered that are very good for pain. But again, there are some sedation that happens. So, you know, in the morning time, if you have a lot of pain, I usually use amino acids. I like to use phenylalanine and tyrosine because they kind of give you a bit of a pick-me-up and they give you some energy. And then towards the evening, if you're feeling like pain and you don't mind being a little sedated, then you can try the Jamaican dogwood or the California poppy is another one that the Schultzia is the Latin for a California poppy. That's another one I've used in my practice. And I actually published an article about this, one of my patients, unfortunately, who had her finger cut off and the door reattached. She became addicted to opioids, and California poppy helped her get off of that. So that's a great herb, California poppy. So combination of a whole bunch of these things could be very good for pain.
And when I was growing up, I would see hills of them. Hills of California poppy. And we didn't know any of that. We didn't understand that. But one other thing, I'd like to go back to the allergies, because we're all going to be experiencing them, or many of us are going to be experiencing them, or are already beginning to experience them and are reaching for Claritin and all these other meds. How does stinging nettles, do you find that effective?
Yeah, very much so. Nettles. There was a study by Paul Mittman in Planta Medica in the 80s, which looked at, maybe it was 1990 actually, that looked at its effect on, as a natural antihistamine, and to block and break down histamine decarboxylase, actually stimulate that enzyme. So it gets rid of the histamine quickly in the body, which is great. That's good for the allergies. And then if you do some immunotherapy where you do local honey, that can actually almost orally desensitize you to a lot of the allergens that's there. So now's the time to start doing, you know, more quercetin and more flavonoids and more local honey or bee pollen, you know, from your local area. And that often is enough to desensitize people and make them not as miserable. But the rosmarinic acid is, I think, one of the best things.
Okay, that's wonderful. I hope we're all writing this down. So now we've got about 6 more minutes. Would we like to go with this time? So we leave the listeners, something that they can use and very directly.
Well, it's up to you. I mean, you know.
Go back to your herbs, because like Chinese skullcap, do I have that right?
Yeah.
Skullcap.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
That's just become apparent to me, or moved into my awareness. I had never heard of it. How does that particular one work? You mentioned it early on.
Chinese skullcap cow probably blocks every inflammatory pathway that's ever been discovered. It's an amazing plant. And it's even, you know, and it's so safe to use. That's the incredible thing. So I use a very strong one that's, you know, like 10 to 1. So like 1/5 of a teaspoon gives you like 10 grams, which is, you know, a hefty duty dose. And, you know, we use about 20 to 30 grams per day for autoimmune disease. And it just seems to block things, modulate the pain receptors that we talked about there, blocks what's called NF-kappa beta, which is this internal, they call it a kinase. It's like an internal communication messenger that signals other chemicals, interferons, interleukins to start amassing and causing inflammation and attacking the system. So we call skullcap, Chinese skullcap, an upstream pain and inflammation modulator, whereas like aspirin and the, you know, those types of things, acetaminophen, are downstream. The more upstream you work in the body, the better you're off, because you know, we saw what happened with a lot of the NSAIDs, how they were taken off the market due to cardiovascular complications and things like that. So we want to look for upstream modulation of pain and modulating the immune system. The other thing that's great about Skullcap is it also doubles not only with the pain and inflammation cascades, but it stops some of the histamine. It's great for allergies because if you look at the molecule in it, it's very similar to quercetin. It's called bicalin, which is a flavonoid, right? So that's the active ingredient in the skullcap. Well, it's almost identical to quercetin, which many people know about as the probably one of the best things they can do for allergies. So it stops the leaky gut, because, you know, when you have all this quercetin in the gut, it really downregulates the inflammation in the gut. And that was one of the first points you brought up in the interview. You got to treat the gut. You have to stop the leakiness of the gut, if you can, reduce the inflammation of the gut so that the endotoxins and the toxic microbes and their particles, their endotoxins, don't gain entry into the bloodstream and create all kinds of inflammatory cascades. So that's why I like the skull cap as like the first thing that I have people do, because, you know, most of them have leaky gut as part of their pathology. I would say that that's a unified theory of most autoimmune diseases.
Dr. Z, that's just a wonderful thing to share with the audience as we're ending up. I would love you to give out your website and the fact that you are doing Chinatown tours. Are you still doing Chinatown tours?
Yep, we have one coming up June 11th, so people can email me if they want more information. That's drznaturally, no punctuation, drznaturally@gmail.com. We can send them information about the Chinatown tour, and that's my website too, is drznaturally.com. where you can get all kinds of information about things that I've written and lectures I've done and books I've written and seminars I've taught. And, you know, we can make these things available to your listeners.
Oh, what an absolute pleasure having you on. So I want to thank you again.
Thank you.
And we're going to remind the audience that the way we're able to have such in-depth and unique interviews is because you support us. So we're going to ask for your support in any way you can. And you can call in 212-209-2950. I almost gave the wrong one. 212-209-2950. And please donate any amount that suits your budget, but shows your understanding and appreciation for what we give. This was a wonderful interview, one of multiples that we do on this show. Also, we would love you to become a buddy. If you call in or go on givetowbai.org or call in again 212-209-2950. You can become a WBAI buddy. You can put our name down, take charge of your health, and you support our show and you support WBAI. So I want to thank you for being here with us. I want to thank you, Dr. Z. It's really a pleasure. I have just a wealth of information. We'd love to invite you back and have you back. I know our audience will really responds to this and this
Very
type
welcome.
Of information. And so I want to thank you again. And Carol, it's always a pleasure. When we're together, we always learn. I definitely always learn.
So. Well, I learned a lot today.
Oh, you did. So thank you so much. And thank you, Reggie, for working with us and helping us out through the bumps, as always. And we will be back next week.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say